Blog Talk Radio.
Every author has that one story that hits close to home for them. This is Yvonne Mason's.
This book is very personal to me.
The 50s has been idealized as a time of prosperity and growth for some. Those with mental and physical challenges often faced scorn and ridicule, and were destined to be left in so-called hospitals to wither and die. Dreamcatcher, Failure Was Never an Option, is the uplifting story of a man named Stan and his family's courage to defy the odds and succeed in an era where no merit was seen in the challenged.
It is the true story of my brother who was mentally and physically challenged. It is because of my brother Stan that I am a successful author.
Dreamcatcher, Failure Was Never an Option is available through Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com now.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is Wednesday night, and this is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason. That was an ad by my friend and ad man and fellow radio host, Chris Dunham. If you need a good ad or voiceover, reach out to him on my Facebook page, because I'm going to tell you what, he knows how to bring product alive. That book, Dreamcast, Your Failure Was Never an Option, is about my brother Stan. Stan was born in 1952, a year after I was born, 13 months to be exact. And he got encephalitis when he was 9 months old. And those that do not know what encephalitis is, it is an inflammation between the brain lining and the brain, and it messed up his coordination and speech skills, as well as his mental abilities to mature. The doctors told my mother to put him away. They said he wouldn't be worth a flip. Just put him away and ignore him, because he would never get past a vegetation state. My mother, being the wise woman that she is, decided, maybe I won't do that. So she brought him home. And you have to remember, at that time, there were absolutely no resources for the challenge. We've come a long way in the last 65 years. But she read everything she could on brain trauma and on traumatic brain injuries. And she figured out that the brain is a muscle, and that a muscle can be retrained. So she set about retraining my brother's brain, and she succeeded. And there was also Stan's desire to be better than people thought he could be. He was working at 7 years old with my brother, tossing papers. He was in the first special education class in Fulton County, Georgia school systems in the 50s. He graduated from Russell High School in 1973, and they told us that that would never, ever happen. He held his first public job at 16, and he would take the bus to downtown Atlanta to the Davis Brothers cafeteria, and he would wash dishes. Then he would catch the bus home. He did that for a long, long time. Then he got into the grocery store business. And when he got into the grocery store business, he did janitorial jobs because they thought that was all he could do. Well, he was offered a chance to go to work at Publix, and I thank Publix every day for the opportunity they gave Stan to live a dream. And he told the manager when he went for his interview that he didn't want to mop floors anymore. And the manager said, well, what do you want to do? And Stanley said, I want to be a stock person. Publix gave Stanley that opportunity to be a stock person. Now, for those of you who don't know what was required in being a stock person, it's not an easy job, because you have to take that manifest that comes with the trucks and check it against the product that comes off the truck, and then you have to go and you have to stock the shelves. Stan did that for a long, long time. Sadly, mentality is diminishing at a faster rate than most of us. He is aging faster. He will be 66 next year. He'll be 65 this year. And he is aging faster. But that hasn't stopped him from being successful. Many years ago, when I decided to write the book, Dreamcatcher, Failure is Never an Option, I told my mother why I was writing it, that I was writing it to leave it for the grandchildren and the great-grandchildren and generations to come, because there would be people who would not remember Stan after we were all gone. They would not remember the impact that he had on our lives and how he has taught us all more than we could ever teach him. So I wrote the story, and while I was writing the story, my mother asked Stan, "How do you feel, Stanley, about your name being out in the public?" And Stan said, "I'm glad, because then people will know how I feel." Now, understand, ladies and gentlemen, Stanley's life has not always been easy. He has been bullied, he has been taken advantage of, and he has been called retarded. Now, medically, that is the name for his disability, or it was in the 50s. He was labeled as retarded. Now, when the little boy called him retarded, Stanley came home and he asked my mother what that word meant. And mother explained to him that he had a sore on his brain, and that sore did not heal properly. It formed a scar. And that scar created the inability to grasp things, to learn things, to do things that others could. He thought about it for a minute, and my brother, in his infinite wisdom, now remember, this child was just in probably grammar school, but in his infinite wisdom, he said, "So I am just slow." And my mother said, "Yes." Now, ladies and gentlemen, this past week, I posted something on my page about the Do Nothing Congress. And a post was put under that, a comment was put under that, and the word retarded was used. And I thought about it and thought about it and thought about it. And I wasn't going to comment on it. But then I put another post up and I said, I don't mind discourse. I don't mind debate. I don't mind discussion. I don't even mind if it gets heated back and forth, because we learn things if we keep an open mind. But I will no longer tolerate someone using the word retarded in a derogatory manner. And the reason for that is very simple. Are retarded in some way. And those of us who say we are not, we lie. I live in a right-handed world. I am left-handed. Now, if you think being handicapped in a right-handed world is easy, it is not. Scissors are 3 times the price. Doors open on the wrong side. Keys go into the steering column on the wrong side. Everything is driven for a right-handed person. So when I put the post up, I said that that word and words like it would no longer be tolerated on my page. Number one, if one cannot have a discussion or a dissertation or a debate or discourse in such a way that it is not only intelligent but intellectual, and one has to resort to words like retarded, then that tells me that their vocabulary is such that they don't have much of a vocabulary. They don't have much of a ability to discuss and to debate and to carry on a conversation without throwing in words that they really don't understand what they're about. I got a little bit of backlash from that. I was told to unfriend this person, which I did. And sadly, I hated to do it, but on the other hand, even Stanley, who is retarded, can carry on an intelligent conversation without name calling. I had another friend of mine say, "Vonna, it's just words, and words can't hurt." Well, they can. They can wound. And they can give a connotation of lack of a moral compass, lack of the ability to carry on an intelligent conversation without name calling. And I don't think we should have to do that. We all, if we look at ourselves, we all have something wrong with us. And yes, retarded means to be slower than or intellectually slower than. Okay, when I get tired, I stutter. When I'm writing my books, I have to be very careful because I transpose not just letters, but entire words. It's like my mind is running faster than my fingers. I transpose letters. I know this about me. Does it make me intellectually stupid? No, it does not. Does it make me intellectually retarded? No, it does not. When I disagree with someone, does it make me retarded because I don't agree with their opinion? No, it does not. Because opinions are a dime a dozen. It doesn't make someone right or wrong. It's an opinion. We must weigh our words carefully. We must weigh our thoughts carefully. We must season our speech with a little salt so as not to discredit our line of reason, our opinion, or our argument, or our discourse, or our debate. Words carry weight. How we use those words say a lot about us as individuals. That is what my brother has taught me. That is one of the many lessons that he has showed me in his life of being unique. And believe me, God knew what he was doing when he gave us Stan, because Stan is one in a million. He feels things that we don't think he does. He thinks about things that we don't think he does. And many people discount him because he is unique. Never discount someone who is unique, but never discount anyone, especially someone unique, because they are our hidden jewels that just need a little bit of light shone on them to bring them to life. He is very proud of his book, Dreamcatcher. Failure was never an option. He shares it with everyone he meets, and he lets people know that that book is about him. And it is his story. It is his success. It is his pain. It is his laughter. It is his life. And anyone that reads that book, if you come away saying, "I didn't get anything out of it," then you didn't understand the book. So, ladies and gentlemen, get that book, and then you will understand why I am so adamant about disparaging name calling when the person that is using that word doesn't really understand the scope of that word. It's an empty word when it is used in a debate, in a discourse, or in an opinion, because we all are retarded. Okay, enough of that. Tonight, it's an open mic night. My guest had to cancel. I wasn't going to have a show tonight, but I thought, what the heck, why not? It's a time for me to get some things off my chest, to bring you guys up to speed on some things. As of this morning, ladies and gentlemen, we have got 5,139 listeners just on this show. Australia is our biggest listeners on this show. Thank you guys so much. You are absolutely amazing. Overall, ladies and gentlemen, we're at 12,225 listeners. That includes all the podcasts. My goal was for 15,000 by the end of the year. Well, as of right now, I'm a little over 2,000 away from that. This show's not even a year old yet. If you want to be on the show, contact me at offthechainradio@yahoo.com. If you've got a book, if you've got music, if you've got a business, if you've got a platform, if you just want to chat. Because here on Off the Chain, this is what we do all the time. We're good at that. And just because I can, I have to tell you all the places we're listened to. We are listened in Canada and Korea, Germany, Egypt, the Bahamas, Ecuador, the UK, the Russian Federation, Indonesia, Singapore, Australia, Ireland, Tunisia, New Zealand, Taiwan, Brazil, Pakistan, India, Nigeria, Saudi Arabia, Portugal, Hungary, Bulgaria, Norway, the Ukraine, Vietnam, Finland, Sweden, Peru, France, the Philippines, Argentina, Mexico, Croatia, Venezuela, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, the Netherlands, Spain, Azerbaijan, Malaysia, Lebanon, St. Lucia, Kenya, Costa Rica, and the Bundes Republic of Deutschland. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that is over 40 countries. That's close to 50 countries where this show is heard. There's absolutely no reason why you wouldn't want to come on this show and pimp your product. Brand yourself, because this show is heard all over the world. I have shows running through the end of July. I'm taking shows now for August. I want to have you on my show. Believe you me. So that being said, let's move right along. I thought tonight we would do something fun. I have a little short story book out. It's called Do You Dare? And in this book, I have several of my short stories that I have no idea where they came from, but the voices in my head said, write them. So I did. And that was an interesting journey within itself, because short stories really are not my thing. But I had written one years ago just for grins and giggles, and I think because I had a thing against an ex-husband. When you hear the story, you'll get it. So I decided that I would put this to paper. Now, there is a state highway that runs from Miami to Maine. And part of that highway is called Alligator Alley. It's Highway 27. And it's a trucker's paradise because it's a two-lane blacktop with no lights. So that's where I set my story. And the story is called Blood Alley. It was midnight. The moon was full and the blacktop was empty, except for the semi-truck barreling south on Highway 27 toward Miami, Florida. The only noise was the sound of the wheels whining on the blacktop, the soft squawk of the CB radio, and the local country and western radio station playing a song about lies and lost loves. The driver was a 40-something redneck who drove out of Georgia. His name was Robert Haynes, but everyone called him Bubba. He was a fast-driving, dip-spitting, boot-wearing, overweight wheel holder. He had been married and divorced more times than he could count. His ex-wives all told him they could not take his being gone 29 days out of the month. Plus, they all knew he strayed while he was on the road. They had the cell phone bills to prove it. This full moon night, Bubba Haynes was running behind schedule. He had a layover in South Georgia and had to do with his latest relationship gone south. She'd tossed all of his possessions on the front lawn after he'd come home smelling of beer and women's perfume. Bubba had to find a place to store his stuff until he could get back to Georgia. That was why he was running behind. So his mind was not on the road as much as it was on finding himself a place to hang his hat when he got back to Georgia. "Damn women," he muttered out loud. "They aren't worth nothing. They just don't understand a man's needs. I gave them all of my money and a place to live. What more could they want?" With that last thought, he put the pedal to the metal and began cruising south at a comfortable speed of 85 miles per hour on Highway 27, better known as Blood Alley. As he cruised along, lost in thought and still cussing the bitch out for making him fall behind, he saw a pair of red eyes in the middle of the road. Bubba started slowing down, using his Jake brakes and pushing his foot brake and clutch through the transmission. The semi slid to a halt with white smoke pouring out from under the wheels. The truck came to rest about 20 feet from the very large, gray-looking, dog-like animal. The creature glared at him for a full minute and then loped off to his right into the trees along the road. And the glare of the large truck headlights, the animal appeared to be a very large, ugly dog. He had pointed ears, two fairly long canine teeth, one on each side of his long protruding snout. Red saliva dripped from these teeth like glittering blood red rubies on a chain. This creature had a long, shaggy, dark gray-colored coat. His tail was almost as long as his slim body, and his paws were the size of small saucers. Bubba watched as the creature disappeared into the trees and wondered what kind of dog would be in this part of the country that looked like he did. Bubba crossed his arms over the steering wheel and looked out of his bug-ridden windshield into the night. Bubba knew he was tired. He had been driving way past the 10-hour legal limit. He'd only stopped to gas up and relieve his bladder. He'd not even stopped to eat. Instead, he'd grabbed some junk food and eaten as he drove. Bubba had to be in Miami at 5 o'clock the next morning. The load had to be dropped or he was out of a job. As Bubba continued to look out the windshield, he thought his exhaustion had finally caught up with him, rubbed his tired eyes, and looked again. "What the hell?" he guessed to the darkness. Bubba put his truck engine in idle and flicked his headlights on the high beam, illuminating the asphalt in front of the rig. Opening the truck door, Bubba stiff clambered out of the rig and slowly walked toward the thing that was laying in the middle of the highway. As he walked in front of the truck, the thing was bathed in shadows. It was blocking the light from the driver's side headlight. And to Bubba, the animal resembled a very large buck. "Man, this thing must be a 12-point, he cried. "I have to see if there's enough of the head to save and mount." Drawing close to the dead animal in the road, Bubba took off his baseball cap and scratched his sweaty head. For the life of him, he couldn't identify the creature. There appeared to be a body with limbs extending outward, but in his mind he could not put the pieces together in any recognizable image. Gingerly, Bubba edged forward, sliding the cap back onto his head for comfort. Unfortunately, at that moment, the wind picked up a little, blowing the stench emanating from the dead animal to his nostrils. The smell of death and decay was like something out of a bad horror movie. Bubba's eyes watered. His throat tightened in protest, and he gagged as the horrible smell assaulted him. Finally, he threw up onto the rough asphalt, only adding to the cloying stench. The dark puddle of what looked and smelled like blood covered most of both of the lanes of the two-lane road. The body was ripped, shredded, and mangled like it had been attacked by a savage beast. The body had been taken down by its throat, and then the stomach had been ripped open and with what looked like teeth. The face of what was left of the thing in the road at one time had been human. Not only had it been human, but it had been a very large man. Bubba could see the eyes, which were still open, and the fear in them, even in death. He saw the bulging triceps and what was left of the lower arms. This person would not have gone down without a fight. When Bubba finally recovered from the latest fit of losing his junk food, he said, "Damn, I wonder what got a hold of this dude. And why was he on this road this time of night, and where's his vehicle?" Bubba looked south of the body, and about 30 yards down was another semi. The lights shining were just the small red parking lights. Bubba had missed seeing them when he saw the creature in the middle of the road. Papa scrambled to his truck and threw open his door. Quickly, he pulled himself into his seat and tried to use his cell phone to call for help. Unfortunately, the area was so remote, there was no signal. Throwing his phone on the seat, he reached for his old standby, his CB radio. Breaker 19, he said into the mic. Breaker, breaker, breaker 19. I have an emergency on Highway 27 at 5 miles past mile marker 230. There's a dead trucker in the middle of the road with his insides hanging out of his body. I need someone here now. How about it? Anybody out there? A disembodied voice finally came back over the CB. Hey, good buddy, this is Smokey Joe. Come back. Hey, Smokey Joe, this is Traveling Jack. I was cruising south on Blood Alley and almost ran over a big dog in the road. He was chewing on something. When I got out of the rig and looked, I saw it was another trucker. Can you get the Florida Highway Patrol down here? This guy's a mess. I have no idea who he is. His rig is on the side of the road and 30 yards down. 10-4. I'll get them on the horn right now. 15 minutes behind you. Stay put. Help is on the way. Roger out, Bubba said as he signed off. Bubba sat in his truck and looked at the still line in the road. He wondered what or who could have killed that driver with such savagery. He'd been driving for many years, and he knew how tough the drivers were. They did not go down easy. Locking his door, Bubba finally rested his head back against the seat and closed his eyes. He knew it would have to stay right here until law enforcement arrived. He would really be late. His boss was not going to be happy. But he figured better to piss off his boss than be charged with leaving the scene of a crime. Bubba didn't know how long he slept. In fact, he did not even realize he'd fallen asleep. His eyes jerked open by the banging on the top of the truck. It sounded like someone or something was trying to rip off the roof of his cab. Then bang, bang, bang was like a hammer pounding his head. He snatched open the door of the cab. What the hell is going on? Bubba yelled at the top of the cab. Whoever you are, get the hell off my truck. Those were the last words Bubba Haynes remembered speaking. The last sight he remembered seeing were two red eyes. The next thing Bubba knew, someone was shining a light in his eyes and saying, just relax, we're going to get you taken care of. What do you mean, get me taken care of? I'm fine. With those words, Bubba tried to sit up and found he'd been placed on a stretcher. When his eyes focused, he saw an EMT standing over him, and there was an IV inserted in his right arm with fluid dripping into his veins. The hell is going on? Bubba asked again. Just then, a man in uniform walked up to Bubba. We pulled up behind your rig right before you were going to be dog food, the officer said. What? Bubba asked in confusion. The officer, yeah. When we arrived, we saw this huge dog trying to rip your head off. My partner and I fired off a couple of rounds. The bastard looked at us as if he was going to run right through us, and then he took off into that grove of trees to the right. Bubba felt his head. It seemed to still be intact, but there were several bite marks that would need stitches. Are you the one that found the body, the police officer asked as he put his pen to notebook. Bubba replied as he was still making sure his major body parts were still intact. Yep, that was me. The only reason I didn't run over it was because there was a giant dog standing over it. It was the largest dog I've ever seen. It looked like it had blood red eyes. As soon as the truck light hit, it ran off. At the same grove of trees. Cop nodded in agreement. Looks like this thing may have killed the other guy. I guess you were going to be dessert. Bubba was carted off to the local hospital, and the cops cleaned up the scene. The crime lab picked up what was left of the first body and impounded the truck to check for evidence. When the truck was analyzed, the crime lab could not believe what they found. Again and again. Still, evidence remained the same. The hairs found on the top of the truck were gray in color, anything else they'd ever tested. It was not human, but yet not quite animal. DNA did not match anything known to even those who had been doing crime scene for years. The police took out the place where the body was first found. There was no evidence. At last, Bubba was released from the hospital and was finally allowed to get his truck out of town. Crime had taken evidence from his truck, too. Thankfully, the load had been released earlier and another driver had taken it on to Miami. The driver had told Bubba he would be at the scene in about 15 minutes the night of the incident never showed up. However, his truck was found several days later about 50 miles up the road on Highway 27. He was nowhere to be found. It was just like he left the rig parked in the middle of the road. The only leads were the same evidence that was found on the first two trucks. Time after time. They took the bloodhounds, they went crazy at the scene, but when they were turned loose into the trees, they never came back. They lost several good dogs that way. Bubba took his rig back to Georgia several days later. He had to dead it because there was a load going back. When he got back to his terminal, his boss told him there was another load going back to Miami. After the last time, do you still want the load, boss gas? I'm bubbled doubtfully. Man, I have to. Last few days just the only money wise. I don't believe in ghosts. I don't believe it's something that can be explained. I'll take the load. Bubba said he walked to the office to get his manifest. That night, Bubba left again, headed to Miami. Once again, it was at night that he pulled out of the terminal, headed south. Bubba took the same route as the last time because it was the fastest. This time, however, he packed on getting his load delivered. The tires whined on the big rig, the city walked, and the radio played cheating songs on his favorite country and western station. Bubba only stopped for fuel in the restroom. He was not going to be denied. Not this time. As Bubba approached the same mile marker where he'd last seen the teacher, he started looking all around him. The man was still full, and the silver light that emanated from it danced off the blacktop. Bubba did not notice any signs of bodies in the road, neither did he see any large gray four-legged creatures with teeth that were in need of dental surgery. At least not on that stretch of road. But 30 miles down the road was another story. As Bubba crossed a single-lane bridge over a canal, he saw what appeared to be a very large gray dog in the middle of the road. When the headlights hit the dog's face, it stared in defiance at the semi. Then it bounded off into the trees to the right. Bubba's truck lumbered over the bridge and continued to Miami. At last, Bubba sat back and began to enjoy the trip. He was about 3 hours, and he knew he was going to make a destination in plenty of time to get a few hours of shut-eye. Life was good again. While he was in Georgia, he and his latest honey had patched things up. When she saw the bandages on his arm, she took him back. Bubba laughed to himself. He'd wear these bandages all the time. That would keep her around. Humming along with the radio, Bubba felt right with his world. That was before he saw the semi sitting in the middle of the dark highway. Bubba sensed something in the road before he saw it. Again, he used his Jake brakes to slow the truck down. Unfortunately, he was a heavy load, and by the time he finally got stopped, he was just inches from the rear of the truck. Damn, not again, Bubba sighed to the darkness. This is really pissing me off. Hello? Anyone out there? Bubba asked. It was eerily quiet. So silent, Bubba swore he could hear himself breathing. Gripping the gun tightly, Bubba stepped to the ground, his eyes scanning for movement. Hello? I said, is anyone out there? Nothing but silence greeted him. Bubba frowned at the front of the semi in front of him. Swinging the pistol into firing position, he slowly approached the back of the trailer. The rear latches were intact and the plastic sheeting hanging out the back was still secure. Carefully, Bubba walked down the side of the trailer, barely resisting impulse to kick the rear tires. Squinting in the darkness, he looked up the side of the trailer and underneath, but saw no signs of any damage. The spare tire was still safely coiled in its hanger under the trailer and the fifth wheel was still encased. Swinging forward in, Bubba prepared to inspect the trailer. Then he stopped. Hanging out the driver's side door was the driver, that is, what was left. His head was mangled beyond recognition. His left arm was dangling from his shoulder by a very small piece of skin. His left leg was completely gone, and there was a pool of blood almost large enough to swim in. Bubba heard a roaring in his ears, and his heart pounded with dread. He couldn't tear his eyes away from the horrific sight. He wanted to vomit, scream, and run all at the same time, but his brain couldn't get his body to cooperate. It was as if two entities had lost all communication with each other. Feet, start running, Bubba murmured. Despite his commands, his body would not move. With sweaty hands, he groped on the side of his belt for his cell phone. It wasn't there. He felt all along his waist. No phone. Panic swelled inside him like a wild thing, growing and spreading outward as his body began to shake uncontrollably. The Smith & Wesson he held in his right hand clattered to the ground. His teeth chattered and his bodily functions took on a life of their own. Bubba's skin became cold and clammy. His heart pounded, his pulse raced, but yet his body still would not move. His mind kept saying, "Run, fool, run," but his body stood frozen. Bubba had no idea how long he stood in that one spot looking at what remained of the other trucker. He had no idea he had inadvertently soiled himself until he smelled the odor. That was what jarred his brain and body to talk to each other. "Oh, shit," he exclaimed. "What the hell is going on? Who or what is doing this?" Of course, there were no answers. As Bubba's body began its slow return to normalcy, he forced himself to walk back to his truck for clean clothes. He opened the small side door next to the driver's door to retrieve his duffel bag. Took out a clean pair of jeans, socks, and underwear. He also found the roll of toilet tissue put in the compartment for emergencies. He thought to himself, "Well, if there ever was one, this is it." Bubba stripped down, gingerly cleaning himself up and gratefully donned fresh clothes, dropping the soiled items onto the ground beside the truck. Once he had his shoes back on, Bubba retrieved the Smith & Wesson from the road and shoved it in the waistband of his pants. That act provided him with a small measure of protection and made him feel a little better. From a distance, Bubba could still smell the stench of his own excrement and forced himself to retrieve his soiled jeans and underwear from the asphalt. Not about to take the stinking clothes with him, Bubba strode purposely to the side of the road. He started in the garments in the trees when he stopped into the chamber. He had the gun set on the side instead of repeat. He started into the air. A surprisingly human scream pierced the air and the animal disappeared. Bubba froze with the gun still raised and both hands on the end of the handle. "What was that?" Bubba gasped. "Surely there was nobody in those trees. It is not possible." Bubba started to fire again, but he didn't see anything lurking in the trees. Apparently, it hit whatever creature had been hiding beside the road, and the animal had either died on the spot or simply limped away. Thankful that the crisis had been averted, Bubba turned and shoved his pistol back into the waistband of his jeans. He walked back to the truck and quickly performed a pre-trip inspection to make sure nothing had been disturbed. When Bubba climbed back into his truck, he finally located his cell phone. Unfortunately, there was no signal. Bubba also tried his CB radio and repeatedly attempted to reach another driver anywhere. The CB was silent, too. Bubba finally realized the only way he was going to get any help was to drive out of the area and find some himself. The other truck was in the lane Bubba needed to head south, but the northbound was empty. Bubba put the truck in reverse and backed up enough so he could go around. He figured he would call the incident in once he got down the road. Bubba heard a thump. "Now what?" Bubba asked the darkness. He didn't want to get out of the truck to see what he might have hit, and with determination, just put the tractor in gear, shoved the accelerator pedal to the floor. Quickly shifting through the gears, Bubba flew past the trailer and the dead trucker hanging from the side of his cab, and Bubba never looked back. 10 miles down the long, dark road, Bubba came to a short-order diner. The yellow neon light flashed off and on in a mesmerizing rhythm with the name of the diner, which was Gray Wolf. Bubba thought that was odd. During his time as a trucker, he'd been to many small mom-and-pop diners, and typically they were usually named after the owners, like Harry and Bessie Steiner. Still, he supposed, if someone wanted to make the little diner unique, he could name it whatever he wished. Bubba parked the big rig and climbed down from his truck. He still could not get a signal on his cell or his CB. He figured maybe there was a phone inside he could use to call the authorities. Bubba walked into the diner and sat at the counter. There was only a couple of customers in the diner, which Bubba thought was odd since he'd not seen any cars in the lot. He sat down next to a weathered old man at the counter. His hair was snow white, his face full of wrinkles, and had the look of deep brown leather. His hands were calloused and his fingernails were full of dirt. He had what appeared to be tobacco spittle in the corners of his mouth. He held a cigarette between the first two fingers of his left hand. They were brownish yellow with tobacco stains, and his teeth were long and yellow from years of smoking and dipping. Bubba pulled the menu from the holder and looked at it, and the waitress behind the counter said, "Coffee?" Bubba nodded without looking up. She waited with pencil in hand to take his order, and Bubba said, "What's good?" The waitress and the old man laughed at the same time. Bubba looked up and said, "Okay, what's the joke?" The waitress said, "How about a plate of homemade barbecue? It is the special of the day. We only serve it during full moons, and it's a sauce better." Bubba put down the menu and said, "Well, barbecue it is." Then he took a sip of his coffee. The old man was staring at Bubba, so to be friendly, Bubba struck up a conversation with him. "I was just on Blood Alley making a run to Miami," Bubba said, glancing from the old man to the waitress, "and I saw a big rig in the middle of the road with a dead driver sitting in the driver's seat. He was not just dead, he was mutilated. I need a phone to call the authorities." The old man laughed a coarse, sour laugh, and his yellow teeth struck a chord in Bubba's memory as he said, "Boy, you ain't going to get no phone signal here. There are no phones to sacred land." Bubba looked puzzled. "You mean like Indian land?" Bubba asked, still watching the old man with the funny colored eyes. "You could say that," the old man replied as he picked up his fork with his large, dirty hands and stuck a bit of barbecue in his mouth. Bubba watched the man eat, and the old man appeared just to be another old man from the swamps of Florida, but there was something different. Bubba said, "How come they never put phone lines here?" The old man said, "Well, boy, it's a long story. But the short version is one time they tried, but the linemen kept disappearing. The cops could never find out why. They finally put it off on the gator population." The old man laughed again. "It weren't gators." Bubba's plate of food was put in front of him, and it looked good and smelled even better. He picked up his fork to eat. The old man looked at him intently and said, "Boy, when you eat that, you'll never want to eat anything else again. Trust me." Then the old man laughed so hard he had a coughing fit. Bubba asked as he pushed a fork full of meat into his mouth, "Why's that?" The old man said, "You'll see." Then he looked at the woman behind the counter and winked, and she smiled. Bubba could see her yellow stained teeth with the longer fang-like eye teeth on each side of her mouth, and Bubba still could not put the memory together. Something kept nagging at the back of his mind. He kept eating and enjoying it. The old man was right. This stuff was the best barbecue he'd ever eaten. The old man slapped Bubba on the back and said, "Well, boy, how do you like it? Pretty good stuff, huh?" Bubba nodded, his mouth still full, and after he swallowed, he said, "I still have to get that trucker seen about. I can't leave him and his rig out there on the road." The old man said with his eyes now in his left, "Boy, it has already been taken care of. Now you don't fret about it. Truck's been moved and the trucker's been disposed of." Bubba frowned at the old man with surprise. "How so? I just told you about it not more than 20 minutes ago. And who's taking care of it and has it been taken care of?" Again, the old man looked at the woman. They both smiled, their yellow teeth shining in the neon lights of the diner. "All things in good time, my boy," the old man assured him. "All things in good time. Just enjoy your supper. Let it settle on your stomach, and then I will show you." By this time, Bubba realized he craved the food almost as much as he did driving for a living. It was like the food owned him. He could not get enough. When he finished his first plate, he asked the woman if he could possibly have another, and she nodded and went to the kitchen to replenish the plate. The old man nodded, his eyes twinkling merrily. "Yep, this one's going to be good." The woman brought the plate back and set it in front of Bubba. He didn't even bother with a fork. He snatched the meat from the plate with his bare hands and shoved it into his mouth. The more he devoured the meat, the faster he seemed to eat, and the more he became ravenous. He was at a loss to understand it. He didn't know what was happening to him. No matter how much he ate, he couldn't seem to get full. Bubba's second plate was empty. The waitress didn't bother asking. If he wanted more, she just brought another plate. Bubba stopped even trying to drink his coffee. He just ate and ate and ate. Then he heard the sound, the howl. It was a long, mournful howl. Bubba lifted his head from his plate, food dripping from his mouth and his fingers. His eyes were wide, his ears had become super sensitive, and he could hear sounds miles away. He heard the mosquitoes in the swamp, the gators grunting, and nocturnal animals calling to each other in the darkness. Most of all, his sense of smell had grown to astronomical proportions. He could smell a female. The old man and the woman saw this change in Bubba, and they continued to look each other and toward him. They saw him sniff the air. They nodded with approval as Bubba's eyes became red, the same red each of them possessed in their own eyes. They saw him wolf down the plates of food like a ravenous dog. They saw him sense the female. The old man said to the woman, "Yep, was a good choice." She nodded and smiled. "It sure was," the woman agreed. "Now she won't be grieving herself to death over the other one." Bubba, with his mouth full, glanced from the witch to the old man in confusion. "What female and what other one?" he finally managed to ask. The old man grinned. "The female is our daughter," the waitress proudly announced, "and the other one was her mate. You killed him up the road with your truck." Immediately, Bubba stopped eating in mid-stride and stared at the woman. "How did you know I hit something? I didn't tell you that part." The woman smiled. "Told us." "What?" Bubba asked with disbelief. "She who and how did she know I was alone out there?" The woman said, "She's my daughter, and she knew because she was in a grove of trees and saw it." The man chuckled as he slapped Bubba on the back. "Boy, you just got your new mate tonight." Bubba frowned at the old man with a look of confusion. "I did what?" Unable to help himself, Bubba sniffed the air again, and even inside the small diner, he could smell her. He wanted her. The old man said, "Yep, you're a new mate. You see, boy, around these here parts, when a mate is killed, a survivor picks a new one. Her mate was killed, and she picked you. She said she liked how you handled yourself. She said you're not afraid of anything. She knew you and her would make great pups." Bubba looked at the old man and then the woman. "What do you mean, pups? Don't you mean children? This is crazy. I don't even know who this woman is." The woman laughed out loud then. "Boy, yes you do. You've been smelling her for a while now. You know exactly who she is and you want her to." Bubba stopped shoving the food in his mouth and the remains of the last handful dripped down the sides of his mouth like blood. He didn't even bother to wipe his mouth or hands with a napkin which lay next to the plate. He used the back of his hand. Something was not right. The hand he used to wipe his mouth felt funny. He looked at it in surprise. The hand had more hair on the back of it than he'd previously remembered. The old man laughed a good belly laugh that sounded more like a howl. "Boy," the old man said proudly, "you've just been made one of us. That was restitution for killing the girl's mate." Bubba looked at the old man in horror. "What the hell do you mean?" he almost shrieked. "I'm now one of you." The woman behind the counter grinned at Bubba. "That barbecue you just wolfed down, well, that was her mate. You've taken his soul. Welcome home, son." Then the woman threw back her head and howled loudly. The old man followed suit. The diner suddenly filled with dark gray dog-like creatures. The male swarmed Bubba and sniffed him. It was a rite of acceptance into the pack. Bubba tried to get away, but every time he moved, the wolves came closer. The old man growled and got between Bubba and the pack. Bared his yellow teeth and dared the males to come any closer. The door flung itself open and in walked the most beautiful light gray female Bubba had ever seen. Her eyes were blood red, her coat the color of light granite, her snout small and elegant, yet long. Her teeth had not yet started turning the dull yellow of the rest of the pack. The woman behind the counter stretched a paw and said, "Daughter, your mate." The young male walked to Bubba and looked in his eyes. In those dark depths, she saw something she recognized. It was the soul of the mate Bubba had killed. The young female bit Bubba on his nose and then licked the blood. She smiled and walked toward the door. Bubba was at a loss for words, but yet he had this insatiable desire to follow that female. The old man sensed this and made the pack move. "She belongs to him now," the old man said to the rest of the pack. "Don't hinder this union. I command it." Immediately, the pack backed off, lowering their heads in deference to their leader. They parted as if they were in the Red Sea and making a way for Bubba to pass. "Go, she's waiting for you," the waiter said. "She'll show you what to do." Bubba glanced back and forth between the old woman and man, and in disbelief, he stared at his hand now covered in dark gray coarse hair. He felt the need to howl. The old man knew this. He said, "Go on, boy. Howl, hunt, mate. Your new life has begun." Bubba loped out the door, and the young female was waiting. She led, and he fought. They traveled 15 miles up Blood Alley. The night had a full moon. There was a semi tooling down the two-lane blacktop. The driver was cussing his latest ex from Copenhagen and listening to the line and cheek songs on the local country and western station. He saw the thing on the road. He started using his Jake brakes to slow down. It looked like a very large dog with red eyes. Ladies and gentlemen, that's just the first story in Do You Dare? There are others that are just as interesting. This little book was one of my favorites to write. There are also several anthologies that I have out that other authors helped me to write. A Merry Scary Christmas is an anthology of creepy short stories. Blessings from the Darkness. All of the proceeds from this book go to my son, who is sick. I get nothing out of it. Satan's Holiday. Also, short stories that 32 authors and I compiled, including a short story by the one and only Nicholas Grabowski. Now, if you have not yet read The Mad Hatter, you must, because I got a review today, or yesterday, and the person that reviewed the book called it deliciously evil. I thought that was the greatest compliment, because there are two stories in The Mad Hatter. Remember, the year is 1888. The place is East End of London. Dead and mutilated bodies are popping up all over the East End from Southwark to Whitechapel. Jack the Ripper is making his mark in the East End in ways that put the city on edge, so to speak. Jonathan Rhodes has been exposed to mercury since he was 16, working in his father's hat factory, which he now owns due to his father's unexpected death. The hats that are created at the factory in such demand, he almost cannot keep up with the orders. Young Elizabeth, who happens to be the employee of Jonathan Rhodes, manages the storefront on Whitechapel Road. A lot of times, and all the young quaking in their boots, the hat factory is booming. Several years to research and write because it is historically correct. From the clothing to the hat factory to the Ripper to how the hats are made, even to Whitechapel itself. So I encourage you to get that book, get Dreamcatcher, get Satan's Holiday, Welcome to Your Nightmare, Do You Dare, and Blessings from the Darkness. That's just a few of my books. I have 14 in all. Tomorrow night, ladies and gentlemen, Melissa Horde Moore will be with me. She is a blogger. On Friday night, my friend and fellow author, martial arts expert, an artist, the man has more talent than the law should allow, Tom Fritchell, a.k.a. T.G. Ripper, will be my guest. And then on Saturday night, Gary Starter, who is also an author who's been on before, will be my guest. I encourage you all to come on my show. It's a lot of fun because it's not scripted. It is just something that we do and enjoy it. And you will get your exposure. Trust me, you will get your exposure. I am going to play for you a promo that I think you'll like.
The year, 1888. The place, London's East End. Dead and mutilated bodies are popping up all over, from Stamford to Whitechapel. Jack the Ripper is leaving his mark, and the city's on edge. Yvonne Mason is back with a tale of murder and millinery. The Rhodes Hat Factory is booming while the body count rises. Why now? How are these hats connected? Has the Hatter gone mad? Mad Hatter, Yvonne Mason. Available now on Amazon.com.
Again, that was my friend Chris Dunham. He is so good. Oh, he is so, so good at what he does. I close my show every time with a thought. Never allow anyone to steal your dream without your permission. Know that everyone has a purpose. And if you believe, you can achieve. And if you want to achieve greatness, then stop asking permission. Just do it. Just go out and do it. Because if you keep asking permission, you'll keep being told no. And dreamers that achieve are never told no. And also, remember this. Your smile is your logo. Your personality is your business card. How you leave others feeling after having an experience with you becomes your trademark. So what do you want your trademark to be? Do you want it to be one that people remember with a smile on their face, or one that people remember and they run the other way? Be a dreamer. Be an achiever. Encourage your children to dream and to achieve and to believe and to know that the impossible we can do right now, and the improbable takes just a little bit longer. I am living proof of that. When I have close to 15,000 listeners on this show, plus I write, plus I have my own clothing design line under Vita.com, under Yvonne Sewell, plus my own photography site under Yvonne Mason, where you can go and buy my photography. Yes, make those dreams real. I'm going to close the show, and tomorrow night, we will be back here at 8 o'clock Eastern Time with Melissa Horde Moore, who is a blogger about books. Until tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, this is your host, Yvonne Mason, saying, dream it, achieve it. Dream it, believe it, achieve it. Until tomorrow night, good night.